keep on running because the winner don't quit on themselves.
What's up, Wisconsin? I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Thursday edition of our show here on the Civic Media Network. It's been a busy week, Anya. Very busy week. I cannot believe it is not Friday.
I can't either. I just thought today, I was like, one more great show to end the week. Oh, two more great shows.
One, two, great shows. I wanted to start with some fun stuff. We've had some pretty gosh darn serious shows this week. Monday and yesterday, we basically did a two-part episodes, two episodes that equaled two parts to commemorate Holocaust Remembrance Day and to talk about what our individual responsibilities are in our community today. And if you want to check those out, civicmedia.us, all the old shows are there. You can take a listen there. Very excited today. We've got an incredibly special guest, frankly, kind of a personal hero of mine, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reporter James Causey. If I listed every award that Mr. Causey has won, that would take up 2 hours. I've been reading him for 20 plus years. I think brings an incredibly important voice to the pages of the Journal Sentinel. He's been a reporter for over 30 years. I should say columnist. He's really a reflective columnist. So really excited to be bringing Mr. Causey to the show at the 3 o'clock top of hour. But this afternoon, I wanted to start with the fun stuff. As you all may have gleaned, I am a bit of a baseball nerd. And while the Brewers lost yesterday, there were a couple of really exciting games on Monday and Tuesday of this week, and they did lose on Monday. They won on Tuesday, lost yesterday, playing the Cardinals tonight. First pitch at 6:05 p.m. You can listen to that game against the Cardinals, which they're playing here in Milwaukee, their home, but you can listen to those games on WRCE Richland Center, WRJN and Racine, Oshkosh Air Support, WISS and 98Q Country, WCQM in Park Falls. You can find all of those stations on the Civic Media app that is free to each and every one of you from your favorite app store. But I wanted to play the sound from the first game this week, the Monday night game, which was just, again, we ended up losing, but there was an amazing moment. This is Gary Sanchez hitting a homer, but it's not the homer really that is the point here. Let's take a listen.
There's a drive deep into left center field. It is way back and it is way gone. A Brewers fan right in front of the fountains comes away with a catch and the Brewers have a 2-0 lead. Sanchez with an absolute bomb.
That was a bomb. He does not hit cheapies, does he, Jeff? Wow, that was not the changeup. He actually was ready for the fastball, 96 to the inner part of the plate at the bottom of the zone, and puts the Brewers up 2-0.
I mean, good fun, right? Go Sanchez, nice big fatty old home run. But if you haven't seen the actual video footage of this fan taking this ball down, it is basically like a Major League Baseball catch. And of course, they were in Kansas City. So he's at the baseball stadium for the Royals, and it's at the very back of the fence in the dead center of the outfield. And this guy goes up and makes, again, what I think looked like a Major League Baseball type catch. I just thought, even if you're not into baseball, you can watch that and be like, that was pretty awesome.
And I can speak from fact. I'm not that into baseball. I watched this clip. I was cheering for this guy. He gets that ball. He's in his Brewers jersey. And I don't know why he's flapping his arms. He's so excited. I'm like, we're not a team with a bird mascot, but go you, dude. You're so excited.
For sure. He has like no idea what to do with himself.
What do I do with my hands?
Yeah, exactly. And he's, you know, he brought his glove to the park. I love that level of commitment. Now, I have caught not one, not two, not three, but 4 baseballs. It may be a reflection of how many baseball games I've actually been to.
Do they sometimes just call you onto the field, Maggie? Are you down in the dugout?
See, some days I feel like, put me in, coach. I'm ready.
Let me in.
I'll trot out to the outfield, do a little shagging of the balls. No, four baseballs I have caught in major league ballparks. I will share with you what they were. The first one that happened, so these are in chronological order, was in 2005 when I was living in New York. I was at Yankee Stadium. It was in the second deck, sort of above and to the left, the nice seats. They were my law firm seat or some partner's seats that I was working at out in New York, kind of to the left of home plate. And believe it or not, I'm sitting there with a beer between my knees and my thumbs pounding out email messages on my BlackBerry, right? Can you picture it? You can picture it. You know, with my Yankees cap on and big old hoop earrings, because hoop earrings go with everything. Yeah, pounding it out with my thumbs. That's what I'm doing. And all of a sudden, you can kind of feel the energy around you change. And I look up, and I see a baseball, and the only person that it is flying towards is me. So, appropriately, I remove the beer from between my knees, but then stand up losing the BlackBerry. That went somewhere. And I literally stood up, and I'm a tall gal, stuck my hands up in the air and sucked in this baseball and sat down. And I was like, I hope the partners at the law firm think catching a baseball is a good reason why I'm not going to be responding to any more emails today. So that was baseball catch number one. The second one was at Wrigley Field. Now, please do not start texting in angry messages about, you know, oh, the Yankees, not even the National League. That's where you catch the bit. Oh, them freaking Cubs. I agree with you about all of that. Now, admittedly, the Cubs, the one I caught at Wrigley was during BP. It was during batting practice. So doesn't really count. But if you've been to peak of the summer baseball games at Wrigley, and I've done a few of them on the rooftops because I lived there for a couple of years. The people that sit in the bleacher seats at Wrigley are die hard, and there's a very like hardcore bro vibe in the bleachers at Wrigley. And that day was particularly hot. It was like 98 degrees out. It was where, again, you're drinking Miller Lite or whatever they serve. It's probably Bud Light because it's Chicago. God knows. You can't even catch a buzz because it's basically water and you're sweating so much. Anyways, at BP, at batting practice, it is a bromance, heavy bro vibe in the bleachers. And the people are already packed in because they come there to try to shag balls during batting practice. This is the point. Bunch of dudes have baseball gloves. I'm just sitting there, you know, double fisting with my Bud Lights that I can't catch a buzz off. And you do buy them at least two per person at Wrigley, because to leave the bleachers and go to find the beer is, I will leave breadcrumbs as I will be back, maybe, you before hold, the end of the game.
You hold this end of the red string,
yes,
and I will go into the mines of Moria to find beer for us here in Chicago.
Yeah, it's what, and heaven forbid you try to find a ladies' restroom.
No way.
And when you do, there's 100 women in line and about an inch and a half of standing water. And not a huge fan of Wrigley. I'm at batting practice, hip to hip with a bunch of bros in their Cubs hats. I am proudly doffing all of my Brewers gear, right? And there may have even been a little bit of smack talk occurring. I know it's hard for you all to imagine that I, Maggie Dawn, might engage in a little Brewers baseball smack talk with Cubs fans, but I did. What do you know? During batting practice, a Cubby cracks one, right? And they're getting thrown literal softball, like easy pitches to hit. It's warm-ups, right? And all of a sudden, I feel the crush of the bros. Because again, the sucker's coming right at me. So I stand up on the bleacher, and I'm taller than the bros. So I catch this puppy, and I literally sucked it down. Like, you know, you catch it with soft hands. They call it, use soft hands. And then stuck my elbows out, like covered the ball with my arms. Yes. Put it into my gut, basically, into my stomach, and bent over and basically boxed out as if I had a basketball because the bros were not happy that the female six-footer Brewers fan talking trash about all of them had just sucked down this home run hit during batting practice. And they were clawing in there. This was not like a friendly jostle.
I've seen adult fans grab at kids who have gotten them. So I can only imagine, Maggie, they were out for blood against you.
Full box out, full elbows out. And then to everyone in the state of Wisconsin, I did us all a solid after triumphantly declaring that this ball is mine. What did I do, everyone? I hope you're all yelling at your radios right now. What did I do? I looked at all of the bros in the bleachers with me. I took that baseball, and what did I do with it? I chucked it back into Wrigley Field. Because I hate the stinking Cubs. I always have. I always will. And I'm lucky that I scooted out of...
You ran, didn't you?
I was like, gotta go, guys. Bye. No. No, I sat down and took a big slug of my now lukewarm wax plastic cuppy thing, Bud Light, while perspiring a bunch. But yes, I took on a bunch of bros in the bleachers at Wrigley Stadium around 2009. So there's, about a 6-year gap between catching ball number one and ball number two. Now, the next two baseballs I caught, much more in rapid succession. Those are fun stories. Caught those both in now AmFam Field in proper sort of foul territory. One I gave away to a kid that was sitting next to me because I was like, by this time, I'm an old pro at this. And the other one I kept because I was just surrounded by a bunch of adults in like VIP seats. You know, it's that by the boxes, that whole... By the way, that's where if you win Civic Media baseball tickets, and we're about to do a giveaway that's going to be coming up in a couple of weeks. Those are the four balls that I have caught at major league games. But I got to tell you about the baseball that I got out of Old Miller Park that means more to me than anything in the whole wide world. You're not going to miss that. We're starting out on a light foot today here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Don't go anywhere. I got a story about my most favorite baseball that I ever picked up at a major league ballpark after these brief messages. Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Network. Been telling some stories about the four baseballs I've caught in Major League Baseball stadiums. All of them during games, except for the one at Wrigley. That's probably my favorite, to be honest with you. Just because I showed them. Getting some love and hate on the text line. Scott, I see you. I hear you. He's a big Cubs fan. Thanks for listening, buddy. Terry in Cross Plains. You go, girl. Heck yeah. Women can catch baseballs too. But I got to tell y'all, many of you may have inferred over the time that we've been together that my dad is where I got all my baseball love from. He's the one that taught me how to score baseball, which I love to do. I get very obsessive about it. And I refuse to buy pencils at the ballpark because they're such a darn ripoff. And why can't I buy the scorecard from the vendor in the concourse anymore? No, I got to go into the stupid stores so they can try to sell me merch. I've digressed. Taught me how to score baseball. I grew up watching my dad play in basically bar league baseball teams. Every year that from the beginning of my waking memory, I was going to games with my mom and watching my dad play baseball. And he typically would either pitch or play first base. He's a lefty. Southpaw. My dad was a finesse pitcher. He played baseball in college. Lifelong athlete, but baseball was his jam. He truly loves the game. It is a lot of fun to go to baseball games with folks like that because my dad knows just so much technical baseball and stats he'll basically tell me, oh, I think the pitcher's going to throw this. This is going to be a slider, and here's why you'd throw that. It's fun because I learn something every time I go to a baseball game with my dad. And my dad, it wasn't until he was well into his 60s that he stopped playing baseball. He still gets the itch when pitchers and catchers report to spring training. It's like mid to late February. Oh, this is when I'd start going to the batting cages and loosening up for the season. He misses that still. So it's always great fun every year to go to Brewers games with my dad, listen to him gripe about some of the newfangled things in baseball, but genuinely to share a love of the game with my dad. And one of the last teams my dad played on was a men's under 30, or a 30 and over team, excuse me. So it was over 30 men's baseball, not softball. My dad is a purist. He will never play softball, refuses to do that. He's like, it's just guys trying to park the ball as far as they possibly can. He likes the technicalities of baseball. So he was playing on this over 30 team. They were really good. Very, very good. They made it to the men's World Series in over 30 World Series in Arizona a couple years. Him and his really good buddy, Mike. My dad's a Mike too. So the two Mikes went to Arizona to play. But one of the most special games was when they played in Old Miller Park. It was a fundraiser game. So they would just sell tickets. It was on a, you know, on a day where the Brew Crew wasn't in town. And so my mom and his sister and me went to go watch my dad play baseball in a major league ballpark. Now, my dad never played in the majors. And, you know, that broke his heart a little bit. And so it was really, really something special to watch my dad play in a major league baseball ballpark. And he got to pitch. I think he came in the seventh inning and pitched. And you could see that my dad was a finesse pitcher. Not the fastest, but you could see the movement on the ball. I mean, I'll be honest, I'm biased. But he got out there and I was like, now that looks like a baseball pitcher. You know what I'm saying? I was so proud of him. He struck out the other team's like big man that was batting in the four slot, the cleanup hitter. And I was like, yeah, Dad, get him. Because the guy was used to just having heat thrown to him. And here my dad comes as a lefty and he has this kind of looping, hot, you know, my dad is in the old school where the pitcher's knee comes way up, you know, and the long extension off the pitching mound. Loved seeing my dad take that guy out. So my dad was then up to bat the next inning in the lineup. And again, my dad and I had logged a lot of hours talking and watching baseball. And so my dad gets up to bat, and he went up in the count 3-0. And the guy was struggling with control. He threw a fastball down the middle. And my dad usually would choke up because his eyesight wasn't as good as it once was. You know, so you just, your hand-eye coordination, if you choke up, it's going to be a little bit tighter, a little bit faster reaction. So my dad goes up 3-1 in the count. That's a batter's count because the pitcher's got to throw a strike or you're taking first base. And I watched my dad step back a little bit in the box and drop his hand down to the end of the bat. And I was like, ooh, Mom. I actually said something to my mom, like, I know Dad thinks this guy's going to throw him a fat old fastball. And what did the guy do? He threw a fat old fastball right down the middle. And because my dad is a student of the game, at 60 plus years old in an over 30 men's baseball league, my dad, Mike Dawn, hit a freaking home run in Old County Stadium. I mean, you want to see me lose my marbles at a baseball game? That was it. I was crying. My mom and my aunt, we're all hugging. My dad's, he always said the respectful way to hit a home run is to not flip the bat, not some big, is you'll just drop the bat, put your head down and run around the bases. Cause the pitcher at that moment, his stomach just dropped, right? You don't want to rub it in any way. So my dad's trotting around the bases, head down, but we are losing it. So what did I do? I, of course, left my seats, and nobody was sitting in the outfield. None of those sections were open because they sold, I don't know, maybe 1,000 tickets, if that, because it was a charity fundraiser. I went and found an usher, nagged this guy to take me out to where my dad had hit the home run, and I went and got the baseball. It's the one baseball signature that will probably mean more to me than anything in my whole life because it was my dad's. And I have a couple signed balls from some other big-time baseball players. But, Dad, if you are listening, thank you for one of my most favorite baseball memories of all time. And I thank each and every one of you for coming along with me on a little reminiscing about Maggie's baseball memories. The Brewers keyed it all off. Now, my other greatest baseball memory, also with my dad, and I think I've mentioned it on the air before, was Paul Molitor hitting a walk-off grand slam way back in the day, also at Old County Stadium, in the gap between that yellow foul pole and where the bleachers used to start at Old County. Well, this week in Brewers baseball, there was also a walk-off home run hit by Willie Adames. Two outs, bottom of the ninth. This was the Tuesday, May 7th game at the Kansas City Royals. Let's take a listen. This was great because Adames had been chit-chatting with the Royals fans right where he would stand in the batter's box. Let's take a quick listen.
Fly ball, left field. It is back. It is gone! A three-run go-ahead home run for Willie Adames. What a shot in the arm for the Brew Crew.
Willie Adames. Nothing better than, it wasn't quite a walk-off. They still had to defend because the Royals got the last three outs of that game. But congratulations to Willie Adames. Those are big, big moments in baseball. Thanks for listening, everybody, as I did my little baseball opener to the show. I'm going to talk a little bit about Judge Aileen Cannon. Can't find her way to a good decision. And, of course, there's a stormy brewing in New York City. Don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media. Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Network. If you sometimes need a break from talk, obviously not a break from my show, but maybe just a little break from the politics of it all. Don't worry. Civic Media's got you covered. We have 80s, 90s, and more. That is on 105.7 CFW in Eau Claire or 99.7 Max FM out of Baraboo in Wisconsin Dells. If you like country, we got 98Q, Country Park Falls, WRCO, Richland Center, all kinds of good tunes flowing on the Civic Media app. Or if you're within range on those very stations, so go check that out. Of course, not during these 2 hours of essential talk. It has not been a good week for the judicial system. Not at all. In case you haven't been keeping score, no baseball pun or metaphor intended, let me summarize. You got Trump's January 6th case under state law in Georgia. You have Trump's voter manipulation case, an election interference case in New York. That is the Stormy Daniels matter. That trial is ongoing as we speak. Then you have the January 6th case under federal law in Washington, D.C. And then you have what I think is the most clear-cut case against Donald Trump, the Mar-a-Lago documents case out of Florida. Basically, none of these cases, none of the remaining three cases, so Georgia January 6th, DC January 6th, or the Florida documents case, none of these are going to see a jury. Not a piece of evidence will be tested in a court of law before the election. They're done. Now, there is one way to resurrect the Georgia case, and I'm going to get to that in a second. But I want to deal with, first of all, let me summarize. The DC case is toast because the Supreme Court is loaded up with five men that don't have their feet firmly planted on terra firma, planet Earth, and are about to dole out some kind of presidential immunity. I guarantee it. I've dealt with that oral argument at length. It was about 2-3 weeks ago. It is an abomination. It's what I called it in the op-ed that I wrote for Civic Media. You can, again, find that at civicmedia.us. We're waiting on the Supreme Court. Lord knows when that will happen. But because of that, I guarantee, as I wrote, there will be some sort of factual hearing that the court is going to require back in trial court about what are private acts and what's official acts. And then that will be appealed as a matter of right by Donald Trump. And he'll probably even get the Supreme Court to try to weigh in yet again. That thing ain't seeing a courtroom before November. Guaranteed. You heard it here. I called it a while ago. It is done now. Oh, and just mind you, back in December when Trump said he was going to appeal the denial of immunity, Jack Smith asked the Supreme Court to take this matter up on an expedited basis. What'd they do? Nah, we'll just let this one marinate. Justice delayed is justice denied. We all deserve to know. Donald Trump deserves a chance to prove his innocence, but apparently not under the Supreme Court. So D.C.'s gone. I'll get to Georgia in a second, but Florida, my goodness. This, I have railed about Aileen Cannon before. She can't even when she's given the correct pages in the correct case, she still can't get the rule of law correct. And there was a trial date set for May. Now she comes out this week and says, trial date, smile date. There's just not going to be a trial date. I can't possibly pick a trial date. And the reasoning for this is that she can't get her job done on time. That's why. I went and got the order off the docket, you know, because this is what I do. If you're watching on YouTube, X, or Facebook, I went and got the order because it was like, what did you? These motions that she's, we have to take this one on May 8th and then the resolution of the seal request on the 20th and non-evidentiary hearing on defendant Nauta's motion to dismiss for selective and vindictive prosecution. Are you kidding me? May 26th. 3/4 of those motions are garbage motions that had been filed by Trump or the other defendants with the explicit intention of slowing the case down. These could be dealt with fairly summarily. Oh, by the way, this is a little nerd wonk for you. If you did go and get the order off of the federal docket, which of course I did, you will notice on page 2 that one of the motions has a little footnote attached to us. This would be footnote 3 of document 530 in the case of the United States versus Donald Trump. Footnote 3 talks about any amici wishing to present oral argument during this hearing must seek leave of court to do so no later than June 3rd, 2024. I'm sorry, say what? Amici or amicus briefs, by the way, amicus, the name of Civic Media's very own Jim Santel's show on Saturdays. Amicus means friend of the court. These are briefs that a non-party, so someone who's not a part of the litigation, will submit. They typically only happen when you get to the Supreme Court level. They don't happen at the trial court. This was interesting because she's taking friend of the court briefs. And what motion is this on, you may ask? It's on the motion to dismiss the indictment based upon unlawful appointment and funding of special counsel. What? It's like the special counsel is illegitimate. That's what we're going to argue. Come on. You need friend of the court briefs on this one? You're even going to take oral argument from friends of the court? This is so bizarre, everybody. The woman is a moron. And I'm going to say not only stupid, but corrupt. We have now well crossed over into bad faith territory. She's doing this on purpose. It's very plain to me. Here's the language from the ruling filed 2 days ago. The court also determines that finalization of a trial date at this juncture before resolution of the myriad and interconnected pretrial and SEPA issues remaining and forthcoming would be imprudent and inconsistent with the court's duty to fully and fairly consider the various pending pretrial motions before the court, critical SEPA issues. By the way, SEPA, Confidential Information Protection Act. And additional pretrial and trial preparations necessary to present this case to a jury. Well, get on it. What the hell have you been waiting for? The court therefore vacates the current May 20th trial date and associated calendar call to be reset by separate order following resolution of the matters before the court. By when? She doesn't say. Consistent with defendants' right to due process and the public's interest in the fair and efficient administration of justice, say what? That takes some gumption. That's radio appropriate. Some gumption on her part. She goes on to say the court has evaluated the statutory factors set forth in the Speedy Trial Act, including the public's interest in the efficient administration of justice. Well, I evaluated the factors and decided that none of them actually mattered, despite a federal law compelling me to conduct a speedy trial. And because I really don't feel like doing my job because I want to shill for Donald Trump and slow this down as much as possible, I'm just going to ignore it. Okay, the decision really doesn't say that. She says this, the public's interest in the efficient administration of justice. Upon such review, the court finds that the ends of justice served by this continuance, though the last deadline specified in this order, July 22nd, Upon such review, the court finds that the ends of justice served by this continuance through the last deadline specified in this order, July 22nd, outweigh the best interest of the public and defendants in a speedy trial. I'm sorry, Judge Cannon. What? You mean to tell me that in a trial that is about a former president stealing military and national security secrets intentionally, that the public and the defendant, who is the nominee for president of the United States again, that our best interests are not to have a trial before the election? I can't believe that one could even make that argument with a straight face, let alone a sitting federal judge who swore an oath to the Constitution. Time under the Speedy Trial Act is therefore told, up to and including July 22nd, to permit adequate time for hearings and adjudication of the substantive pretrial motions, discovery disputes, and SEPA issues. Here's my favorite line. Many of which present novel and difficult questions. Oh, my job's hard. Get on with it. Now, I don't just want to rail against her. I hope you're all thinking to yourself, well, how would you do it, Maggie? Or how would you get this done? Or why is that? We understand why it's a problem. You're denying the public. First of all, she's violating the Speedy Trial Act, which sets firm deadlines for how cases are to proceed. That's why she had to say, the deadlines under the Speedy Trial Act are told. In other words, basically suspended indefinitely is what told means. How would you fix this problem, Maggie? Well, let me tell you, I know a thing or two about this. Happened to be a lawyer, happened to have clerked for a federal appeals court judge. You know, the judges that oversee and overrule bad decisions and bad judging, like what Aileen Cannon is doing in Florida. Here's what you would do. You would work backwards from the deadline set in the Speedy Trial Act. You would figure out exactly by when you would have to have these various motions decided. You would tell your clerk, and you would hire more than one elbow clerk. You'd hire three or four. If you needed a special dispensation from the chief judge that oversees the Southern District of Florida to hire more clerks, you would do so. You would marshal up all of the resources necessary to present and brief and review for your private review with your clerks helping you. Review all of the motions and all of the law, and you'd ask them to assist you. And most of all, you would work morning, noon, and night tirelessly, because the administration of justice and the very democratic process itself is relying upon you, Judge Cannon, to do your job on time. That's what I would do. I wouldn't be crafting 5-page orders that excuse my tardiness, my inability to manage my own docket. When you raise a hand and swear an oath as an Article III lifetime appointee to a federal court, part of what you are agreeing to do is to do your job in a timely way so that the public and defendants can have their day in court. And in this case, one of the most important and also, oh, by the way, most clear-cut cases from a criminality perspective, you would get your damn job done. Half of these motions that she's saying are so hard and such novel questions, they're not. You treat Donald Trump as he is, a criminal defendant who happened to be the president of the United States, but who has violated and betrayed our country's most sensitive secrets. That's who he is. That's what he's been accused of. You treat it with the seriousness and with the alacrity that such a case merits. You don't find every reason under the book to hem and haw. Good friend of mine uses the word over perseverate. It's basically just overthinking everything. I don't think she knows what is a clear-cut question when she sees it. I don't think she knows how to manage a docket. I don't think she knows what her actual job is, which isn't to shill for either side, but to fairly decide the issues in a timely way. This is ridiculous. Oh, and the other thing you don't do when you're a federal judge is whine about your job. You don't write things like, oh, it's going to take me a long time because, you know, these issues are novel and difficult questions. We'll talk a little Stormy and I'll talk a little Georgia when we come back after these brief messages. Don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Network. Even in my years to come, I'm still going to be here. Welcome back, Wisconsin. Shout out Little Dolly. It's Dolly. Is it Dolly Do It?
Yeah, this is Dolly's cover of Sweet Dreams by Eurythmics off of her awesome Rockstar Deluxe album.
Awesome. Everybody needs more Dolly Parton in their lives. You know what I'm saying? Little Jolene. And then the Beyonce cover of Jolene.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Oh,
it's,
yes.
It's like all these fabulous women talking to each other through music. I love it. My thanks to Jim Denny for a shout out on the Book of the Faces. Also, Steve from Milwaukee reminding me to tell all of you that there is a petition online to remove Judge Cannon from the case. Go sign it. There's 300,000 signatures. Sherry from Horicon, what's up? Thanks, everybody, for participating online and through the phones. You got a question for me this last segment before we bring on my very special guest in the 3 o'clock hour, Mr. James Causey. Columnist extraordinaire, observer of things Milwaukee and beyond for the Journal Sentinel. Can't wait to talk with James. But I'm kind of beside myself this week. Aileen Cannon fumbling the ball yet again. And Trump's never going to see the inside of the courtroom in the Florida documents case. And that is the most important case, in my opinion, because it is the most clear. You don't get to steal national secrets. You don't get to say, I don't have them. I don't have them. I'm lying. I don't have them. I've got them, but I'm going to lie to the FBI and to the Secret Service and the National Archives. And there's a law that requires me to give them back. And I'm going to lie about it. And I'm going to keep them in my bathroom and maybe show them to some journalists and God knows who else. I think we can all get our heads around that concept. So that case, as far as I'm concerned, is dead in the water. If Trump wins election, the first thing he'll do, when inaugurated, is wave a magic wand and pardon himself. And that case will go away. The New York voter manipulation case is a state law case. It's a bit complicated. That one, here's the problem. Any way this comes out, Trump wins. Right? Anyway, acquitted. See? Political prosecution. Convicted with a sentence. This is election interference. I'm being martyred. That is a lose-lose proposition in that case, as far as I'm concerned. By the way, go see my Bill Barr episode from last week, if you want to know why the feds never got around to prosecuting Donald Trump for that case. So that one's New York, doesn't matter. It's a win-win for Trump. Florida's gone. D.C., yep, the Supreme Court, that January 6th case, the Supreme Court's going to mull that one over for so freaking long that we're not getting to trial on that one before November. Jack Smith actually isn't, you know, some sort of wizard that can get things done much more quickly. And make no mistake, the Supreme Court's going to require another hearing back in the trial court, and then that'll have its own appeal cycle. Not seeing trial before November on that one. So that's toast. And then we come to Georgia, the other January 6th case. The Georgia Court of Appeals yesterday said that they will take up the question of whether or not District Attorney Fani Willis should be removed from the case. You will recall Fani Willis had an admitted relationship with the prosecutor that she hired to lead the January 6th case under Georgia state law. The trial court judge there heard basically motions saying because they had a relationship, there was a conflict of interest, she should be removed. The special prosecutor stepped down. The trial judge ruled that she could, while there was, quote, an appearance of impropriety, she could remain on the case. Trump appealed that, obviously, the appeals court in the state of Georgia now saying that they'll hear that. That will take forever in Georgia. It's a very lengthy process there. This is a total, total circus in Georgia. Attorneys for Trump wrote that despite Attorney Wade, that's the special prosecutor, despite Attorney Wade's departure, that was not enough to, quote, resolve the appearance of impropriety, and it has cast a pall over these entire proceedings. It called McAfee, the trial court judge's decision to keep Willis on the case, an enormous failure and a structural error that would not just cause substantial error at trial, but could later cause a verdict to be overturned. They might be right. Guess what District Attorney Fani Willis should be doing? Step down from the case. Resign. Take it out from your office. I have talked about the fact that on this show that I think some of her treatment in the media has not been entirely fair. But at the end of the day, that was an egregious error in judgment. And oh gosh, Wade made it worse. He went on one of the talk shows. And I can't believe he did this. Went on one of the talk shows. This was on Monday with ABC News and basically contradicted the sworn testimony that he gave in the hearing about whether or not to remove Fani Willis. When pressed on when the relationship began and when it ended, he said during the interview with ABC that it went from early 2022 to late 2023. Oops, under oath, Willis and Wade both said that their relationship ended in the summer of 2023, not the end of. I mean, stop doing these things. She's got to step down. It's the only way that that case may have any chance to move forward unencumbered with what has become the sideshow of sideshows. So in case any of you are keeping track, justice system holding rich and powerful just as accountable as the rest of us people, us little people, is 0-for-4. Four prosecutions in four different jurisdictions, two state level, two federal level, and not a single one of them is going to make a hill of beans difference as to the criminal conduct that Donald Trump engaged in. Don't we deserve better? Don't we deserve a justice system that at least can move fast enough with, you know, 4 years in between to get a trial started before the freaking election? Is that too much to ask? I guess it is, Anya. A wee bit too much. The efficient administration of justice. Justice delayed is justice denied, and each and every one of you has been denied justice by being deprived of the opportunity to see the evidence against the former MAGA president tested in court. I'm Maggie Dawn. Don't go anywhere. Columnist for Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, James Causey, up next with me here on the Civic Media Radio Network.